Hi, I'm Ed Slott.
And I'm Jeff Levine.
And we're two guys who just love to talk about retirement and taxes.
Look, our mission is simple, to educate you, the saver, so that you can make better decisions, because better decisions, on the whole, lead to better outcomes.
And here's how we're going to do that. Each week, Jeff and I will debate the pros and the cons of a particular retirement strategy or topic, with the goal of helping you keep more of your hard-earned money.
At the end of each debate, there's going to be one clear winner. You, a more informed saver who can hopefully apply the merits of each side of the debate to your own personal situation to decide what's best for you and your family.
So here we go. Welcome to the Great Retirement Debate.
All right, welcome back to a very special episode of the Great Retirement Debate. Ed, good to be back with you.
It is good to be back, and we're talking about something that's coming very soon, new Trump accounts.
That's right. This is a very special episode on the new accounts, the 530A or Trump accounts created by the One Big Beautiful Bill Act last year. And Ed, I think our question for debate today is, are Trump accounts the biggest deal ever?
Well, they are a pretty big deal. Everybody wants to know, you know, anytime you offer free money, everybody wants to know, how do I get it?
That's a good point. I like free money too. You know, when we talk about, is it a big deal? I think it really comes down to, is it a big deal from interest from people, or is it a big deal from a planning perspective? And I think ultimately we're going to find that the answer to those are two very different things. There's a lot of interest, but I don't know that the planning hype is as real as the hype around the creation of the accounts. But before we kind of dive into whether or not these are the biggest deal ever, let's start with just, what are these? So at a high level, Ed, what are Trump accounts? For somebody who's not heard of them at all or just hasn't really gotten into it, what is a Trump account at a very high level?
Well, basically, they're defined as IRAs.
Okay.
With two periods. One, the period up to the child is 18. They call that the growth period. And once the child starts his 18th year, they turn into actual IRAs.
So effectively, this is another type of tax preference account. So we have things like IRAs and HSAs and 401ks and 529 right. plans. The Trump account is just another type of tax preference account that people might benefit from because of its built-in tax advantages.
Correct? Yeah, but it has unique advantages over IRAs and most other accounts in that growth period up to the year the child turns 18.
All right, so let's start by maybe breaking down these two periods. And you mentioned this growth period. I actually find it really interesting because I think it's a very mislabeled term.
Well, I use it because that's what the tax law calls it.
That's right. The tax law does call it the growth period, but it's when you can make contributions. And then after that, you can't. To me, the part where you can't is the growth period.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, you're right. It's called the growth period. So the growth period is that initial time from when a child is born through age 17. And in order to establish one of these accounts, does have to be someone with a Social Security number. And a lot of people are thinking about these sort of along the lines of 529 plans because they're for young people.
Right.
I think one of the biggest differences is you can sort of pre-fund a 529 plan by establishing one for yourself and then changing the beneficiary. With these Trump accounts, whoever the money goes in for, it's theirs always. There's no changing of the beneficiaries. You actually need a living person. So you can't start funding these, if you will, beforehand. It has to be when a child is born. They have to have a Social Security number. And again, this initial phase goes from the year or when the child is born up through the year the child turns 17. And the year the child turns 18, there's other rules. So let's start.
That's when it turns effectively into an IRA following all those rules.
All right, so let's go into the unique period, this zero to age 17 time. First off, how much can someone contribute?
Well, there are several limits, but let's get right into the one that everybody wants to know about, the free $1,000 seed.
Free money, okay, yeah. Yes, all right.
Nobody should turn that down if they qualify, but I think the bigger picture is, because they hear what they want to hear. It's not like you can get $1,000 and go out and buy a big screen TV.
That's right.
That is literally locked up until the year the child turns 18.
Yeah, there's very little access. That's one of the unique things about these accounts during that that growth period is from zero to 18. Basically, you can get the money if you do a rollover to another Trump account. You can get the money at age 17 if you do a rollover to an ABLE account, if we're looking at a disabled beneficiary, or you can die. That's it. Those are your options for accessing the money. I mean, there's really not, there's no special rule for if you have an emergency or anything
right,
like
right.
that.
Right, right. No early distributions. Mm-hmm. But it's meant that
it grows for at least seven up to the end of the 17th year, and that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the biggest things as we get into this $1,000, the biggest thing I would encourage people to do is to think about these as retirement accounts.
Right.
You know, the primary purpose of these accounts is retirement. I know, again, because it's for young people, there's been a lot of talk about should these replace UTMAs, should these replace 529 plans for college savings. If we're looking at near-term savings, there are almost always going to be better options. These are first and foremost retirement accounts. And I mean, that's evidenced by the fact that once you turn 18, if you use the money for a non-exempt purpose, you're going to be hit not only with income tax, but a 10% penalty. So let's go back to the contributions, though, because I do think that's one of the more complicated aspects of Trump accounts. There are actually up to five different types of contributions. So you already mentioned one, this seed money contribution or the so-called pilot program. And one of the big differences is that this pilot program for Trump accounts is a temporary provision, right, of the law. It's only active for children born between 2025 and 2028. But if you've got a child or someone else in your family that is born in those years, well, then they're entitled to that $1,000. And Ed, as you said, $1,000 is $1,000.
Right. Nobody should turn that down.
You might love the president, hate the president. You might love the name of these accounts and hate the name of these accounts. At the end of the day, $1,000 is $1,000. In 10 years, that $1,000 might be $2,000. In 20 years, it might be $4,000. It might be more than that if it grows. Why turn away that free money when all you have to do is fill out a form and check a box? That's
right. I find when I do programs, I do lots of consumer programs. Mm-hmm. When you talk about saving money, saving taxes, or building money, everybody's in. There's no politics.
All right, let me look at the camera right now and say this. Take the $1,000, right. All right? There's really not a downside to that.
Yeah.
Now, that's one type of contribution. That's the seed money contribution. As I mentioned, there's five different potential types of contributions. Another one, the very simple one, is the rollover contribution. Basically, if you want to move money from one Trump account to another, you can. But there are three other types of contributions that people need to be aware of. One is what I would call your regular contribution limit. It's like mom and dad and grandma and grandpa putting in the money to the Trump account each year. And that limit is $5,000 per year. And unlike traditional IRAs or Roth IRAs,
right,
you don't need earned
right.
income.
That's one of the big benefits mm-hmm. of that. And that's an overall what we call aggregate limit, because one of the other sections you're going to talk about is maybe companies putting
that's in. That's right.
And that would cut into that 20, mm-hmm. the 2,500.
That's right. There's another. So the fourth type of contribution. So far we've talked about like your regular mom and dad, grandma and right. grandpa contributing the $5,000 limit, the free money of IRA, the pilot program rather.
And the pilot program does not cut into the $5,000.
That's right. And then we've got the rollover contributions. Then beyond that, there's employer contributions. And this can come in kind of one of two flavors, right? There's employer contributions where, in theory, the employer might be, very benevolent and say, "Hey, anyone who's got a child here who is under the age of 18, we're gonna put money into a Trump account for you, and it's just a added benefit." I don't see too many companies going that route. Where I see more companies potentially allowing for employer contributions is via what are called Section 125 cafeteria plans.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know, people listening, you might have like an opportunity to take some of your salary and put it into a dependent care flexible spending account or a healthcare flexible spending account. In other words, instead of you being paid directly, your employer takes that off of your paycheck and then pays it directly for you. And the benefit of this, of course, is that it's pre-tax money at that point. So
we'll talk about the $2,500 limit and how it intersects with the.
That's right. Well, I'm going to do that in one second. I want to get down to the last one here. So that $2,500 is per employee.
Right.
So if you have multiple children, it's still $2,500. Two children, you can do $1,250 apiece. You know, $2,500 to your favorite kid, zero to the kid you don't like, whatever you want, but it can't be more than $2,500. And then we get to the last one, which is a charitable contribution. There are new organizations that are popping up, and you've probably seen in the news, Ray Dalio and Barbara Dalio contributed, some obscene amount of money to make this happen. I think a couple, you know, millions of dollars for Connecticut residents. There was a $6+ billion
from
contribution
Dell. Yeah.
From Dell, right? Yeah. And then I think Nicki Minaj came out and promised to do $150,000 to $300,000 for her Nicki Minaj fans. So,
by the way, as he was saying this, this is not as easy as it sounds. It has to go to a defined geographic area. You just can't pick these four friends here and these.
Who get a very defined geographic area. The people who live at this address on this date. Yeah, yeah. No. Yeah, you're right. It has to be a defined class. So, for instance, I think the Dell contribution is going to...
Zip codes.
Yeah, but going by
under
zip
100.
Codes. Oh, that's the Dahlia one. Yeah, it's going to be to zip code. Yeah, under $150,000. Yeah. And then in Connecticut, in Connecticut is the Dahlia one. The Dell one goes to zip codes.
So it's not that simple.
Yeah. And ultimately, it's got to go through a real charity, right? Like that's.
And what's interesting about that, there's no limit on that.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and that's really one of the interesting parts. So to me, the most complicated aspect of this is all the intricacies of the contribution limits and the way the rules work. So we talked about limits. We didn't talk about the tax treatment of them. When we're talking about the limits, the $5,000 limit is impacted by the regular contributions you make and your employer contributions. That is a coordinated limit for those amounts. So if your employer puts in $2,000, you can only side contribute $3,000.
Well, let
for
me stop
year.
You there because I could see this happening. Uh-huh. Grandma says, oh, $5,000, what a nice thing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put $5,000 in that account, assuming mm-hmm. it's set up all properly. And then what happens if the employer also put in, say, $2,500?
Well, some of that money is going to have to come out as a, what is called an excess right. contribution.
So there's got to be some communication.
Good luck with that. Well, you know, one of the interesting things, though, is that in order to make this a little bit easier, you can only have one Trump right. account at a time. So at the end of the day, that custodian should be able to help you a little bit more than a traditional IRA contribution might, because you can have 10 IRAs at 10 different custodians, and they would never know that you made those contributions elsewhere. With the Trump account, since you are theoretically limited to only one Trump account, if all of a sudden that custodian receives $10,000 of contributions during the year, one would hope that custodians would develop some sort of procedures to help alert individuals that they have over-contributed. But that remains to be seen. But that $5,000, again, it's the regular contributions and the employer contributions. All the other ones don't count. So rollovers don't count. The foundational or nonprofit contributions, they don't count. The $1,000 pilot contributions, that doesn't count.
When you
count.
Say it doesn't count against the $5,000 overall.
That's right. Clear. So you can get a $1,000 regular or pilot contribution program this year, and you could put $5,000 in via regular contributions. But you couldn't, as you say, put $5,000 of regular contributions and $2,500 employers. That's one of the complicated aspects of this, which contributions count towards that limit, which don't. The other thing that's complicated is the regular quote-unquote contributions you make, that $5,000 creates basis
right,
in the account.
Right, after tax. And that's the only kind of a contribution grandma, parents.
That's right.
That's after tax.
That's right. Everything else is tax-free when it goes into the account or pre-tax, if you right. will, which means it's all going to be taxable when it comes out. And, Ed, of course, this brings up one of our favorite rules.
Pro-rata rule.
Pro-rata rule yeah. dealing with distributions. yes, yeah. So,
but that brings us to... the 18th year.
That's right.
That's not going to happen.
All right, we've now got to age 18. So what happens at age 18?
Well, here's one of the things some parents have actually questioned. It's come up with some of our advisors that are talking to people. So you've seen some of the numbers. They say, well, if grandma puts in $5,000 and the $1,000 and for 18 years, could be $200,000 mm-hmm. at 18. And then the parents say, wait a minute. So at 18, it's the child's IRA?
That's right.
It's their money? Mm-hmm. I have no control?
Nope.
They can just spend it.
That's it.
It's all taxable, plus a 10% penalty.
Can you imagine putting in all that money for your child or grandchild, then having them go, yeah, I'm going to give a lot of it to the IRS in the form of a penalty or tax.
Well, I don't think they were thinking IRS. They were thinking, you know, whatever. I don't even know what they'll be thinking in 18 years, but it's going to be something grandma probably didn't approve of.
Yeah, well, that's one of the challenges with building a large account like this.
But that would happen anyway if they did a uniform transfers to minor account.
Yep, by 21 or 25 right, in some states. So maybe a little longer, but still, you're you're right. At some point, it becomes
it's their
the
money.
Child's money. Yep.
But assuming they're prudent and the parents educate them along the way, and by educate them, I mean don't tell them it even exists. That's probably the best way to do it. Don't even tell them the account exists. At that point, a couple of things can happen. It becomes an IRA, and it can be converted to a Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. But if they do that, let's say at 18, 19, you know where I'm going, 20, 21, 22, yep. 23, 24, what could happen?
The kiddie tax, of course,
right.
Until 24, yeah, which, you know, the kiddie tax, this is effectively unearned income. So to a large degree, it's going to end up being taxed at the parents' rate. And while the parents' rate may not be high, chances are if you're not in a high income scenario, you're not socking away $5,000 a year for your kid
right.
each year. So it's almost always going to be for someone who's already in a high tax environment, which means we probably need to look at waiting until the child is 24 or otherwise ages out of the kiddie tax
right.
in order to make those Roth conversions.
Or just use the smaller amounts, the first part, like in 26, I think it's about 2,700. The first 1,350 is
very free. Small. Yeah. You'd be looking at super small conversions each and every
yeah.
year. But yep.
But I think during this whole period, and who knows, in 18 years, when we do this, I don't know, the umpteenth edition of this podcast, hopefully there was communication about this and the parents either don't tell them or educate them that this money's been saved because it's a great idea. Imagine kids coming out at 18 with a couple of $100,000 available to them.
All right. So we've now kind of really covered a lot of the rules. Some of the other rules that people just should be aware of, the investments for this, at least during, you know, age 0 to 17, very limited in terms of, you know, it has to be a broad U.S. It has to track like a broad U.S. index. The expenses have to be a tenth of a percent or lower. So there's some other rules here that apply. But I guess the biggest thing I want to know, Ed, is, you know, when we talk about are these a big deal? Are they a big deal from a planning perspective? Should people use Trump accounts when there are other options? So let's compare it to UTMA accounts,
right.
529 plan accounts.
Or the parents' own brokerage accounts.
Sure.
You know, that may be one way to get around that other problem where it's all the kids' money. The parents just save maybe in their own Roth IRA or their own brokerage account and earmark that in their mind.
Just gift it to the kids later
right.
on. Mm-hmm. So what do you think? Like compared to other accounts, Trump accounts, big deal, not big deal?
Well, they are some part of a deal and probably most people should consider it again, I hate to say it, for the $1,000 and maybe company contributions. It's good to have in the bank anytime you can start with something and have all that 18 years or even if a child is, say, already 15. So in another few years or some growth.
I think that's fair. You know, there's been a lot of hype about this. A couple of months ago, there was a Wall Street Journal article talking about the millions of dollars in nest egg that the Trump accounts can create. I think that's true. And there's some value, certainly, in the tax-deferred element of this. But when you compare the Trump account to other options, for instance, if I think about college education, to me, in almost all circumstances, the 529 is still going to be far superior when we think about college education and funding, pre-funding for that. If we're looking at a 529 plan, all that growth is tax and penalty free if we're using it for education.
Right.
With a Trump account, at age 18, you could use that money for college without a 10% penalty because it would be eligible for the IRA exception for higher education. But it's otherwise going to be taxable. So I think that is a pretty compelling argument still for the 529 plan for dollars that are earmarked for education. And if you're earmarking it for education and the child doesn't go to school, with the 529 plan, you can kind of undo that decision. You could always change the beneficiary back to yourself even.
Right, right.
Whereas with the Trump account, as we've talked about several times, that's not the case.
But some people have maxed out. Some of these 529s have gone too far and they're having problems on the other side being overfunded. So a Trump account could be another vehicle or their own brokerage or UTMA account.
That's right. I think an UTMA account is a very compelling argument here. In fact, I've done a lot of the math behind this, and there's a really good argument that if you are tax savvy with your UTMA accounts, meaning each and every year, you know, you talked about this free amount of like $2,700.
Right.
You could capture $2,700 inflated over time of free long-term capital gains in an UTMA account. In other words, if you put $5,000 in this year and next year after a year and a day, it was worth $7,700, you could capture that gain tax-free go back, sell it right now, this instant, like snap my fingers here, and then hopefully our microphones pick that up, and then buy it back now, and now you've got $7,700 of basis in your same investment. Right. It's all tax-free. Effectively, we have accomplished our goal still of having a tax-efficient investment. And if you look at the monies that would be available when a child reaches age 18, 22, 24, when they age out of the kiddie tax, there's a compelling argument that the UTMA is actually more tax efficient. Now,
it doesn't have any limits either, though.
That's right. You can put more than $5,000 in. Now, where the Trump account may actually have the long-term benefit is if we think about what that person might invest in over time. If they want to be a little bit inefficient, if you will, trade on their accounts, right, or maybe buy things that kick off interest, then that tax-deferred wrapper of the Trump account from 22, 23, up through age 65, 75, whenever these ultimate dollars are distributed, that can make it more valuable. The other area I see—
taking away what we call the tax drag.
That's exactly right. Instead of paying tax every year on the interest, dividends, and capital gains, right, you get it tax-free. But if you're going to be somewhat tax efficient with your investments, let's say you just want to buy an S&P 500 index fund and hold it until you're 65, which might not be the worst idea in the world, right, in some cases, it's kind of tax efficient by itself. You're not selling it, you're not creating anything. So ultimately, everybody's still got to look at this on their own. But I think there are a few things we can definitely say, as every situation is different. So I'll say not always, but the overwhelming majority of the time, I think we can agree it is absolutely something where if you have free dollars,
right,
you should be taking advantage
of course,
it.
Yeah.
And if you've got a Trump account established for someone and there is any pre-tax money in there when the child reaches age 24 or when they otherwise age out of the kiddie tax, that is a prime opportunity to do those Roth conversions. That should be like almost a no-brainer.
One other point, I wasn't even going to mention it, but I think some of the estate attorneys have brought up this gift tax problem. I only mention it because people are talking about it, and I don't think it's going to be a problem. Let me explain the problem. Everybody gets to gift in a free annual exclusion amount. For 2026, it's $19,000. You can give that much tax-free to anybody. So that would come under that, but it doesn't, because under tax law, technically, it's not a completed gift because the child can't touch it until it's 18. Mm-hmm. So it's a gift of what we call a future interest, which means you can't use it against the $19,000. Has to cut into your now $15 million exemption, but that has to be reported on a gift tax return.
How often do you think that's going to happen, Ed?
Probably not. And I think they're going to change it because they had the same issue, if you remember, with 529.
That's right. And then they changed the law.
They changed it. Yep. Just putting that out there because you may see some things, some people warning. I know we wrote about it on our blog about watch out for annual 709 gift tax returns. But all in all, it's something virtually every family should consider.
Yeah. I think ultimately, look, it's just another option for folks. And for some people, it's going to be an account that they save a lot of money in. For some people, it may just be the $1,000. And I'll go out on a limb here, Ed. I'm going to say that $1,000, that even though it's only a pilot program, I'm going to bet that gets extended. You've got both sides that, when I say both sides, Democrats and Republicans, that are going to have reasons for extending it. It's, on one hand, it's a very progressive program.
Yeah.
Everybody gets the same $1,000, no matter whether you are, the highest of income or the lowest of incomes. It's very progressive. So on that side, it has some support from typically left-centered, left-focused individuals. On the other hand, this was created by the President Trump, the Trump administration. Republicans passed it under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. It's their initiative. They're going to want to see that extended too. So, and you don't want to be the president or the congressperson that took away the $1,000.
No. I think I would go one step further. I think that $1,000 will probably have some kind of inflation factor or probably go up over time.
Yeah.
It's going to be very popular.
I think these will be something that's going to stick around for a long time. And whatever you want to call them, like we said, whether you want to call them 530A accounts or Trump accounts, they're another tool in the, planning, another arrow in the planning quiver, something to think about. All right. Well, that'll do it for this very special episode of The Great Retirement Debate. Ed, thanks so much. And make sure to check out season 5 of The Great Retirement Debate, which will be dropping very soon. And check out those Trump accounts live here in just a few weeks. All right, with that, I want to thank you and remind you, the Great Retirement Debate is meant to illustrate both sides of the coin, to give you an unbiased look so that you can make better decisions. Ed and I are firm believers that more informed individuals make better decisions. Better decisions lead to better outcomes, and that's what we're all about for you. So thanks so much for joining us here at the Great Retirement Debate, and we'll see you real soon.
Jeffrey Levine is Chief Planning Officer at Focus Partners. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be construed as specific investment, accounting, legal, or tax advice. Certain information mentioned may be based on third-party information which may become outdated or otherwise superseded without notice. Third-party information is deemed to be reliable, but its accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. The topic discussed and corresponding arguments are those of the speakers and may not accurately reflect those of Focus Partners.